Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And good morning. I'm Debbie Verney.
And good morning. I'm Jean Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, and you can be our very first caller. And we were really, really busy last weekend, so you need to get your calls in. The phone number is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Give us a call. How are you doing this morning, Jane Marie?
Well, I'm good. I got distracted because you guys mentioned the Kentucky Derby, so now I have to look at the list to pick my horse, you know, so.
Yeah, I'm all about the Derby. Actually, I like the mint juleps, so, you know, okay. You have to have a mint julep while you're watching the Derby, you know.
Right. Who's your pick, Ben?
Well, I do like the 14, which is the favorite, but there's a few other horses in there that I see. I'm looking for value, so I'm looking to try and make a dollar or two, or 20, or okay. 200. So I'm still looking at that part of it. So we'll have to maybe by the end of the show.
Okay.
I'm hoping though that we're so busy I can't even look at that. So that I'm answering phone calls the entire hour, 518-476-5900. You know, I did mention just a little while ago that, you know, it's better if you get in early because we'd hate to get to the end of the show and not be able to get you on. So make sure you call the number and get in because it's free advice. Who doesn't want free advice? Well, maybe not from your mother-in-law, but other than that, you want free advice.
Definitely.
You also need to call in because you are talking to a star this morning.
Who's that?
Debbie is a star.
She is?
She got voted best attorney in the Saratoga region.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding.
Wow. Congratulations, Debbie.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Are you going to talk to us anymore, or are you too good for us now?
Oh, no. Definitely going to talk to you guys.
Okay. All right.
You know, I won't do my Academy Award speech. I'll just, you know, I'll say that for another time.
I'd like to thank all the little lawyers that I stepped on to get to the top. Thank you very much. Hold my coffee. All right. That's great, Debbie. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And we'd love for you guys to give us a call, 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900. We had an interesting week of webinars, right, Jane Marie?
Yes, we did. I did the one for dual residence, which is a newer one that we're doing, but having we have many clients who have homes in two different states because they don't want to spend the winters here anymore. And you have to think about some legal and financial things. You can't just, you know, say, okay, I'm going to go there because it's warm, but you need to think about your powers of attorney, or you need to think about income taxes. So it's a really good one to talk about those different issues.
Yeah, I did top 10 reasons to plan your estate. Mm-hmm. And that's another one of the fairly new ones that we've been doing, trying to jazz it up a little bit, right?
Right, and that's right.
That one was kind of fun. I try to do it like, you know, the top 10 from David Letterman. It's not as exciting as his used to be. But this week we have wills versus trusts. That's on Wednesday, May 5th. That's at 10 a.m. in the morning. And then 2 in the afternoon on Wednesday, May 5th is what to do when a loved one dies. That's an excellent one. I think you're doing that one this week, right?
I think so. I usually do that one. And that one's, yeah, really good just to get people to walk them through that process. Because if you're, well, I was going to say if you're not prepared, but you're never prepared for that moment. But kind of to help you get organized and know what you would need to do to take care of things if you're the executor or if you're a family member. And it kind of just put things in place so you're organized and can get everything done and quickly.
Yeah, I have a situation this week that dad died back in 2018. Mom died 2015. Dad died in 2018. And it basically, there's a house, right? And the one sibling lives in the house. But the will says that the house is supposed to be sold and then divided equally between the kids. Well, mm-hmm. the one that lives in the house is also the named executor, so he hasn't probated the will. He hasn't done anything, and he basically mm-hmm. just wants the other sibling to sign it over to him.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, no, you can't do that.
No, that's pretty common. I have another one like that, and it's been going on, same thing, for a couple of years, and the sister won't move out. And they've tried everything they can do. You know, they're even offering her like a discounted price if she wants to stay and buy it. But those are difficult situations there, you know, if one sibling's living there. And, you know, ideally, perhaps the parents could work that out ahead of time, you know, but it doesn't always happen.
No. And in this situation, the one that's the executor who's living in the house apparently has the original will, so he's not going to probate it, right? Because I'm not going to. So mm-hmm. I told my client, I'm like, well, we can always bring an administration proceeding and say that there's no will, right? Because we don't know if he's destroyed it or not. Right. And then if he comes in and says, no, I have the will, then at least we get him to probate it.
That's right. Then he has to show it. That's a good idea. Or if not, you can go through the administration and it would go to all of the children equally.
Right. Which is what the will says anyway.
Right. That's right.
So it's one of those things where, you know, when parents are naming people, they have to think about who's going to do what. Because if your kids don't get along while you're alive, they're sure as heck not going to get along after you're gone.
Right. And I've seen parents address that in different ways. I mean, if one child's living with them, sometimes they decide to leave the house to that child because they've been helping to take care of them. Or if they don't want to leave it all to that child, we've written in our wills that that child has an opportunity to buy it from the other children, and you can write that into the will. You can say they have to buy it at fair market value, or you can say they have to buy it at some percentage of fair market value to give them a little discount. But that kind of sets the stage for what, you know, what should happen afterwards.
It's very difficult. And like you said, if you've got somebody that's in the house that doesn't want to move out, okay. What are you going to do, evict your sibling? You know, have the sheriff serve them with eviction papers? Of course, I guess you can't do that right now anyway, right?
Can't do that right now anyway, right? But as tough as it is, people don't really want to do that to a family member. So you're left in a tough situation. I mean, you know, ideally you can negotiate a price and that person can buy the other children out. But they'd have to go get a mortgage or whatever. So sometimes it's in a situation because they can't buy the other siblings out, it sits there for a couple of years and no one does anything.
Right? Why would I want to buy my sibling out when I can just stay here?
That's right. No one's forcing me out. I can just stay here.
So those are some of the things that Jean Marie and I face every day when we have people come in. And it's always funny because they're like, I bet you've never heard this one before. And we're always like, yeah, we have.
I know. That happened to me this week. They were telling me a story, and I was just shaking my head. They're like, oh, okay, you know this already. I'm like, yeah, if I've seen this movie before.
Exactly. So as far as webinars go, a lot of people call in. They're like, oh, I can't make it for that certain time. We do have the webinars that are recorded that are actually on our website. So if you miss the webinars, you can actually go to our website, which is www.herzoglaw.com, and you can watch the webinars at your leisure, right? Just like Netflix. Get your soda, get your popcorn, and sit and watch it. Fast forward to the parts you don't want to listen to. But we have those, and then we have them this Wednesday, and then we have our week of webinars, which is the week of May 10th. And right. Those are going to be at 2:00 in the afternoon, all 5 days. So on Monday, the 10th, is Medicaid and Estate Planning Myths. That's at 2:00 on the 10th. 2:00 on the 11th is Aging in Place. 2:00 on the 12th is Elder Law Basics. 2:00 on Thursday, May 13th, is Wills versus Trust. And the 14th is, hey, the top 10 reasons to plan your estate. So We'd love for you guys to join us. You can go on our website, www.herzoglaw.com, and click on it and register for the webinars. And again, we want somebody to call in. The phone number here, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. So I have a question for you, Jane Marie. If you're someone's power of attorney and they're still competent and can make their own decisions, what's your job?
Sorry, Debbie, I lost you for a second. That's the problem of not being in the studio.
So if you have, I'll give you a situation. I have a client that's in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. She's still competent, but her sibling is her power of attorney, and her power of attorney is trying to direct everyone as to what needs to be done. And when we're getting directions, we're like, is that really in her best interest or at her direction? So the question is, am I supposed to be taking direction from the power of attorney, or if she's still competent, even though she's in a nursing home, who am I listening to?
Well, always, if the client is still competent, they have a say in everything, right? Even though they have a power of attorney. So I would say as long as the client can still say what they want, that they are in charge. And the power of attorney is really only there for when that person is, you know, incompetent and can't speak for themselves.
Right. And they're always supposed to be at their, in their best interest or at their direction, right?
That's correct, right? So even if that person can't speak for themselves, the power of attorney has to act in their best interest, and that's the standard that they're held to. And if they're not acting in their best interest, then that's a chance against litigation, but to go have a guardian appointed to take the power of attorney away.
Which is difficult.
Right. Yeah, right. You don't want to have to do that. But if the person can still act for themselves, even though they're in a nursing home, you know, they can still be competent. They can still call different places and make arrangements themselves. That's what they should be doing.
So whenever you're setting up a power of attorney for someone, do you usually tell them they should have co-powers of attorney because there's checks and balances, or do you think that that's too cumbersome? What are your thoughts?
I usually think one person, well, on a power of attorney, you can have two or more. And if you're going to have two or more, I do that sometimes more when the agents don't live here or when they aren't local. And then I say that they can act separately. So whoever is in town visiting mom or whoever lives nearby can do something, or someone else can help out. In terms of checks and balances, I mean, then you have to decide, are you going to make them act jointly on everything? That would be a way where they would have to agree. But that could lead to a standstill, right?
Which we've had happen before.
That's right.
Jay Marie, Debbie. We do have a caller on the line. We have Carol in Albany.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. I have a neighbor. I live in an apartment complex. I have a neighbor, and she's 79 years old. And they're trying to get her out because she can't really keep her place up. And so she has no power of attorney, no will. This is all knows. She has no siblings, no children. And so I gave her your number, but I don't know what she's going to do. They're going to try to put her in assisted living. She hasn't been declared incompetent. Can they still put her in assisted living because they're trying to evict her?
It sounds like this is a safety issue of is she safe where she's living? And usually adult protective services.
Not really. I mean,
yeah.
Not really declared incompetent, but I mean, her place has never changed from very, she fell, there's just stuff all over the place.
Well, I mean, I think in that case, Adult Protective Services is going to come in and try and make sure she's safe. You know, if she's there, they could get some help in. If they think she needs to move somewhere else, they're going to move her, and it is more for her own safety, you know, even if she is... has capacity. She may have capacity, but she's not able to take care of the house. So it really depends on each individual situation.
Would it have to go to court for them to decide? I mean, can they definitely evict her because her place is just really a wreck on those grounds?
If they wanted to move her, or if they wanted to gain control, they would have to go to court and have a public guardian appointed. So that's what they may be doing. It would be up to Adult Justice to decide to file those papers. And then that's good, because then she gets her own attorney appointed who represents her interests. And then it gets worked out from there.
Can she still get, since she's on Medicaid, could she still get you guys to help her, like, with her money as far as putting it in a trust and not having the nursing home take everything?
Sure, that's something that she could call us. We could talk to her about. So have her give us a call at the office this week. That's 518-465-7581.
Can I just ask one more question? So if you know, they're trying to find someone, when if they issue got worse, would they, how do they find out, like, somebody like five generations later that's in her, that will get her estate? Like, do they have a way to do that, and who does that?
Oh, so when someone passes away, if they don't have a will, and they don't have any immediate family members, just in brief, there's a public administrator appointed by the courts, and they have to do their due diligence to search for her closest relatives. You know, and
so they don't have to do that until she passes away? They can't get someone to help her now? In that way?
No, that's something that's in terms of where your assets go when you die.
Really sad that she has no advocate, but she has someone from social services, but I don't know if they don't come to the hospital, I don't think, because she falls a lot. So okay, well, I'll just give her your number then. I think that might help for her finances information.
Sure, great, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, that's a very sad situation, and it's something that we deal with a lot. People don't have relatives around, and they don't have anyone to advocate for them.
Yes, that is. That is a very tough situation. I mean, if you're in a crisis, you know, there will be a guardian appointed for you by the court. They are, you know, not family members. They're attorneys who have gone through guardianship training. And if there is no one else to take care of things, at least you have a professional handling things for you.
Yeah, it's difficult. And that's why you really need to think about that and get some documents together, especially if you're alone like that, right? You need to have someone in charge and thinking forward, right? If you're going to be in a situation like that, I mean, like she said, she doesn't have any family or anything like that. Does she have any friends or anything like that could help her?
Yes, that's right. Even if you don't have any close family members, you could probably either find a friend or someone to help you with finances, or, you know, do something to get your documents in place. And even if you may not have someone to be your healthcare proxy, you could sign a living will that says what kind of care you would want. So there are things that you can do to try and get, you know, some things in place.
Yeah. So we'd like for you to be our next caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. I got a call from one of my clients this week that said he had a friend who was in assisted living and wanted me to call her because her brother had put her in assisted living. So I called her and I said, is he your power of attorney? No. I said, then how did he put you in assisted living? She goes, well, he sold my house. He sold my car. And I said, okay, you're in assisted living, right? And she is in assisted living. And I'm like, and she goes, but I don't want to be here. I'm like, then leave.
That's right. There's nothing stopping you, right?
And so she was like, well, what do I do about my brother? He sold my house and he sold my car, and how do I go after him? And I said, well, was he your power of attorney? And she said, no. So I'm sure there's more to the story than that.
I'm sure there is. Right.
If you're in assisted living and you're still competent, I mean, assisted living is is not lockdown. I mean, you can leave.
Right. It doesn't mean that you're incompetent. It just means you need a little bit of help. And if you don't like it, you can figure out another way, right?
Right. You can figure out someplace else to go. So a lot of people think that they're trapped, you know?
No, you're not. You know, and sometimes you don't know if you're going to like it ahead of time. You know, we talk about this a lot when we do aging in place, about where's the best place for you to live. You know, is it at home with home care? But that's not always the best for everyone. Some people are very social and they want to do a lot of activities. So an assisted living facility is better for that because there's a lot of activities going on there every day.
A lot of people don't want strangers in their house, too.
That's correct. In fact, Debbie, when we look at the over 55 places, they have a lot of activities. But, you know, I think I'm ready to move in right now.
I know. I've seen that, too. Like, let's see. You know, I could play Mahjong all day. I could do that. Play cards. Right. I could do that.
The one I like, they have a bar there. I forgot which one that is. And a hairdresser. I'm like, there I am. Get a glass
of wine. That's the summit. The summit. The summit has, when I went there too, they have their own movie theater. They have their own hairdresser. They have an indoor pool. I was like, huh.
It's like being on vacation. It sounds fun.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like a permanent vacation. I could do that. So give us a call. 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900. Last week, the second half hour, we were just like back-to-back-to-back callers. So hopefully you can get your calls in. Whenever we're looking at our estate planning, I had an attorney, because my clients are moving to Pennsylvania, that had looked at their New York documents and had advised them if they needed to redo their documents now that they're in Pennsylvania. And I always tell my clients, if you're going to move to another state, you probably should redo your healthcare proxy and your power of attorney. Not that New York's aren't any good, but just to make it easier for you. But as far as your will and your trust, you probably should be fine. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's actually, I talked about that this week on the dual resident webinar. And yeah, I agree. The power of attorney and healthcare proxy, it's easier to have that state documents because it's just going to be more widely accepted. But your will and your trust are going to be valid in every other state. So if you're not changing anything, you don't really need to change it because you're living in another state. And of course, if you want to change who's your executor or your trustee, you could change that. But that's the nice thing about doing our trust is that they are valid in every state and they follow you wherever you move.
I thought that was, you know, an interesting concept. The attorney in Pennsylvania had suggested to them that they do a Pennsylvania trust and move their stuff out of their New York trust into their Pennsylvania trust. And I said, okay, if you do that, you're going to start your 5 years all over again. And they had done their trust back in like 2008.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good idea to start the whole five-year period over again. So
no, especially since they're older now.
Right. And they're... New York Trust is perfectly valid. Those are federal Medicaid laws about protecting your assets and I can't say it, in an irrevocable trust. And sometimes it's tough to say that in the morning, right? And so, you know, you don't have to redo it for that state's laws because they have to follow the federal law in terms of protecting your assets in a trust.
Yeah. So it's one of those things we always suggest that you visit with an attorney in that state, but it's not necessary a lot of times to change anything other than your healthcare proxy and your power of attorney. I have clients that are snowbirds that live in Florida and here, and they have powers of attorney and healthcare proxies for New York, and they have them for Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's something I recommend also in the webinar. So you have one here and you have one there. Because you know how difficult it is to get a bank to accept the power of attorney. So now, if you're going in with a different state's power of attorney, well, of course, the bank isn't going to recognize that. They're probably going to send it up to their legal department to review. So now it's going to take longer for you to be able to use it.
Yeah, and that could be a problem, definitely be a problem. So we want to try to make sure that you have the correct documents for the correct state and mm-hmm. that your documents are updated. Now, they're going to be changing the power of attorney law in what, June?
Yes, in the middle of June, which is really great. So they're making the power of attorney shorter by taking that statutory gifts writer, and now they're kind of just making combining that into the power of attorney. So it's one document that's a lot shorter. That's going to be really helpful because it's a 14-page document, right? And there's many, many places to initial and to sign. I actually had my first in-home nursing home visit this week because nursing homes are starting to let people back in. And I had to go see a gentleman to sign the power of attorney, and he was very, very weak because he was in rehab. And it probably took 15 minutes to get him through one power of attorney. And, you know, normally we have them sign two, but I didn't even do that in this case. And then we had other legal documents for him to sign, but we just said, no, that's okay. That took a lot out of you to sign the power of attorney. And then we let his wife and son sign the other documents as his power of attorney. So for situations like that, I'll be happier to go in with a shorter document. It'll make it easier for that person to sign.
Yeah, the problem with a lot of powers of attorney is the one I had from clients this week, they came in and I don't know where they found the form. I mean, I asked them if an attorney did it. They said yes. Mm-hmm. But it was a form that was before the changes in 2009. And basically they had done it. And I said, you know, this is not even a valid power of attorney mm-hmm. because it's not on it's on an older form, but you've done it after the forms were changed. And they're like, but, you know, it was done by an attorney. And I'm like, well, the attorney shouldn't have done it. Yeah. So
the attorneys who don't do estate planning get them wrong, right?
Well, you know, you go online, and that's why I tell people do not do stuff online. Well, I got this form online. Well, that doesn't mean it's right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, have you had? Right now we're coming up to the break, but I had clients this week who had their parents had Susie Orman documents. That's always my favorite.
Yeah.
I said, no, we're not going to use those.
Did they have the nice little silver briefcase that they come in?
Oh, I didn't see them. We were on a Zoom. But, yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right, we're coming up. We're coming up to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
So we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here to answer questions on estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. You can be the first caller in this half hour at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Before we were going to the break, we were talking about powers of attorney. Let's talk about community Medicaid now. That's another exciting topic, don't you think?
No, it is. And it's really popular. And we were just talking about that yesterday. I'm doing a seminar coming up with NYSARC and Community CD Choices. We're doing it for the New York State Office of the Aging. But yeah, one of the things we were talking about is that many, many people don't know that community Medicaid exists, right? So it's just getting the message out there to people that you can use Medicaid to get home care, you know, and then from there, learning more about it. But don't you still find that many people don't even know there's such a program?
Oh, there's loads of people that don't realize there's such a program. I have a friend who we ended up getting community Medicaid for her, and because she has Alzheimer's, but she's young, and the community Medicaid pays for her to have an aide that comes in and, you know, helps her with the medication because she's diabetic. Right. Mm-hmm. So helps her with that and helps her with getting to her appointments. And I think she gets maybe 20 hours a week, which mm-hmm. because she really doesn't need more than that. But mm-hmm. it's just so helpful because her sister lives out of state and it's very, very difficult for her to do anything for her. I mean, she has a lot of friends and stuff that live around here that will help her out. But community Medicaid is just an amazing thing that people don't realize is out there that can help with your loved one that's at home, right? Because like Harry's mother-in-law, whenever she first started on community Medicaid, I think she was getting like 6 hours a week because she only needed someone to help her, like put her medication together and this and that, up to the point whenever she passed away, she had 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's not like you have to be stuck with the original amount of hours you get. If the person progressively gets worse, you can get more help.
Right. That's what's great about it is you just get as many hours as you need, and that can change as you go along. So sometimes, and because it's a process to get on community Medicaid, you know, it can take 3 to 4 months, I believe, something like that. So, a lot of clients start the process now, knowing that, you know, maybe they don't need a whole lot of care right now, but maybe 4 or 5 months down the road, they may need more care, right? And so you're just getting yourself approved and you're set up, so now it's easier to increase the hours as your needs increase.
And that's a lot of the stuff that we talk about in the Aging in Place webinar, which is actually recorded on the website, or you can watch it live, which is Wednesday, May 12th. So, and in a week or so, and mm-hmm. we go over the basics. Is your house ready for you to stay home? You know, a lot of people look around. I mean, I know that my house, everything's upstairs, the bedrooms and everything are upstairs. I only have a half bath on the first floor. And I thought about that. If something happened to my mom, of course, my mm-hmm. mom would never leave Missouri, but that's beside the point. If my mom had to come and stay with me, is my house a house that she could stay in? And the odds are probably not because mm-hmm. of the way it's situated. And people need to look around and think about that. When my parents bought their house that they're living in, well, my mom lives in right now, it's a ranch, right? Everything's all on one floor. There's no mm-hmm. steps. Mm-hmm. If something happened to her and she wanted to stay home, we'd have to obviously get some grab bars and stuff like that in the house. But other than that, her house is pretty much okay. If she needed additional help, we would be able to probably get her on community Medicaid and get some people in the house to help her out.
Right. That's one of the first questions we always ask is if you want to stay at home, look around your house and see if it's okay. Many older homes have, they're two stories, or they have the laundry in the basement, right? That's something pretty common. We have clients, that's a place they fall, right, going downstairs. And we want to try and avoid the falls because, you know, typical, they'll say, I don't need any help. I can do this on my own. And they're doing all these things on their own, but they're not so steady on their feet and they fall. As we know, falling gets you into the nursing home, gets you into the rehab and kind of sets off this whole cycle.
It does. Mm-hmm. Give us a call, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. I know that Kim, who's our geriatric care manager, she cracks me up whenever she does her presentations because she's younger than you and I. And she'll start talking about how she's already getting her house ready. In case something happens, she's like really planning ahead. You know, they're doing renovations on their house right now so that if something happens, they can age in place because she's seen, you know, the other side of it. And she's like, yeah, she goes, this is my forever home and I'm going to make it so that it can be my forever home. And a lot of people don't think that far ahead.
I know she's planning ahead, but probably because she sees it so many times, you know, she goes to houses and looks and helps evaluate to see if it's a good setup for someone. So yeah, she's planning ahead to get everything on one floor so she could do everything there, which is great.
Yeah, I'm not planning that far ahead.
No, I'm not planning that far ahead either. And the other thing when we talk about aging in place is that you don't necessarily have to be at your home. You could be in an independent living in an apartment somewhere, and you could stay there and then get help there. So it really varies depending on where you want to be. Because even staying at home, sometimes the home is just going to be too much maintenance for you. Right? No one wants to have to deal with the lawn or the snow or pay someone to do that. So aging in place can be in a nice senior apartment with additional help coming in.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity too, because usually those are all on one level, right?
That's right. Usually they're all on one level. There's usually going to be some amenities there, right? And you can still have aides come there and help you under the Community Medicaid program.
Debbie, J. Marie, we have another caller. We have Diana from Albany.
Good morning, Diana.
Good morning. I had a question about the financial ramifications of this in-home Medicare or Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know, how does that affect your monies? If you have a savings account or something like that, do they go back to 5 years and all that?
That's a great question. So right now for Community Medicaid, there is no 5-year look back period. So you have to, you know, spend down your assets to $15,900. But to do that, you could transfer your assets, you know, either to your children or to a trust. And then you can apply for Community Medicaid the following month because there's no look-back period right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's a great opportunity to do that. Now,
yeah, because I just received money from my late husband's will, and, you know, I just wondered, you know.
Well, if that's something that you don't really need to live on it, you know, that's something that you could put aside and save, it would be a good idea to try and protect it by putting it aside. So if you needed Medicaid, you could apply for Medicaid.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
And we have another caller. We have another caller. We have Barbara from Ballston Spa.
Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. A question I have. I've set up various things with you. When you pass, is there someone in that would be able to, a name that you would be able to contact to, check, and notify your heirs?
What generally happens whenever someone passes away, if they're our client, is the family the family contacts us and says, what do we need to do? And we say, well, you know, as soon as the funeral and everything's over, give us a call, or if they need to come in then, we meet with them.
They live away, though.
Mm-hmm. But they would come in for your funeral, right?
Yeah, but I'm just saying the day of passing.
Well, the day of passing, generally the family notifies everybody. we generally don't know that a person has passed away until their obit comes out into the paper or until someone calls us and tells us that they passed away. Generally, if they're working with...
You don't have anyone that would act on the trust that you have and so forth that you set up with you. There's no person or company that would be available at that point in time. Names,
you mean,
I guess.
You mean to notify people that you passed away?
Yeah, yeah.
Generally, no. We don't notify people that the person has passed away. Generally, the family notifies everyone that they passed away, and then if it's something that we need to do legally, meaning distributing assets or helping wrap everything up, then at that point in time, we would contact the family to say, hey, you got $1,000 underneath her will or underneath her trust, and we would have them sign documents to receive their money. But as far as notification when someone passes away, again, we generally don't even know that the person has passed away until someone calls and tells us.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I guess I'm, I appreciate that. I just was looking, I guess, further past that time. So thank you.
Well, do you have someone that you've appointed in your documents that's the person that's in charge?
Well, I have them, but they're not here.
So if something happened to you, do you have someone local that's like your healthcare proxy or something like that that would notify them?
Not really. Not when I set up the trust with Deb.
I mean, that may be something that you want to talk to your people that live away and tell them where everything is. If anything happens to you,
I've done that.
Okay.
But it's just, I'm here and I can take charge. But it's after that time, that's all. I've notified a lot of people, but nobody specific. That's
difficult. That's very difficult when you don't really have anybody around. I guess whomever you have that's local, your friends or anyone around, you could tell them, hey, if anything happens to me, this is the person that you call. And then they would kind of set off the chain of events of notifying people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And leave a list of names
to contact. And I'm sorry, I missed the very first part of the opening of the program. What is your name?
I'm Debbie Verney, and Jane Marie Schaefer is also on the
Jane
radio today.
Okay. All right. I know Debbie. Okay. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Have a great weekend. You know, that's an excellent question. It's like, who knows, right? Who knows if something happens to you?
I know that is tough because you have your legal documents, but they're probably in a secure place in your home. So, you know, someone would need to go to find them, to find the people to notify. So it's probably a good idea to, let those people know or give them a list or maybe leave a list of important contacts on your refrigerator. You know, I know a lot of people do that. That may be helpful for someone to find individuals to contact.
And you're helping somebody out, too. I mean, it's one of those things where when someone passes away, that's not the time that everyone wants to start having to go through all the paperwork to try to figure out what's going on. The easier that you make it for everyone is going to be that much better, because when everyone's grieving, you don't want them to have to start going through all your drawers to find out, oh, she has a bank account here and she has this and has that. If you have things kind of organized, then it helps your family out a lot. Years ago, I had an estate where the nephew was the trustee. We had everything in trust and everything was set up. And his uncle basically had this note that said, okay, for my paperwork, go to the red file cabinet in the garage, and it's in the second drawer. And he opened that up, and there was this, like, folder in there that says, if you're reading this letter, I must be gone. You know, this is my doctors, these are my lawyers, these are my CPAs, my my car insurance is through this company, my health insurance is through this company, you need to do this, you need to cancel this, you need to do this. I mean, literally everything you could ever think of was all on this sheet of paper. And it was very helpful because he, you know, didn't live local. So whenever he came in to take care of everything, everything was kind of spelled out for him, made it a lot easier.
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful thing to do if you're inclined to be organized, right? But it's great to put all that together. And we have a book that we hand out. We still have those, I believe, What to Do When the Loved One... No, what is it called? What My Family Should Know?
Everything anyway, My Family Should Know or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember the title, but I have one. Actually, it's been sitting on my desk at home forever, and I haven't filled it out. But you should fill it out. Because it has a great guide to all those types of things, you know, beyond bank accounts, just all kinds of things that you would want people to know, or, you know, where to find things, numbers to call, like you said, doctors and insurance companies. It's a good organizer. And that is going to really help your family because, like you said, they're going to be grieving and it's going to be hard for them to find things.
And passwords. Passwords are huge.
Oh, my gosh. That's right.
It's one of those things where I can't even remember my own passwords, let alone somebody else's. And if someone's trying to wrap everything up for you, you know, being able to take down your Facebook, be able to log on to your cell phone to get messages, to be able to, I don't know, just different passwords, clean up your accounts. I mean, it's huge to be able to have passwords so that you can clean things up.
Yes, that's right. There are going to be things that you need to get into the computer to find out. I mean, probably if you have a password for your computer to get in, you need to leave that, right? So
definitely. So we probably have time for at least one more caller. If you want to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. We'd love to hear your questions. As Jane Marie and I could talk all day, we don't really see each other that much.
No, we don't really. We're very busy working, and we just sometimes pass each other in the hallway.
Definitely. Comment on each other's masks and if it matches their earrings, you know, important stuff like that.
I think I violated that this week. I try and be very coordinated. Since someone's calling, we'll talk about it. I try and match my mask to my outfit, but then I forgot that my earrings didn't match my mask. So it was a bad day.
The fashion faux pas, right? Fashion faux pas. That's why I stick with the solid color ones. That way I just like solid.
Well, it's funny, masks have become part of our routine. We're just so used to it, right? So.
Well, they're part of our wardrobe, you know, and I've seen some really cool masks.
Yes, they are. People have really expanded on that.
They have. So, again, give us a call, 518-476-5900. And we've got a few minutes left this week on May 5th. We have Wills versus Trusts at 10 a.m. on the 5th, and What to Do When a Loved One Dies at 2 p.m. on the 5th, and then the week of webinars starting Monday, May 10th. So on Monday, I'm actually going to the Malta Senior Center, and we're going to present on senior scams.
And you're actually going in person. That's great.
Yes. And it's an interesting presentation, and people don't think about things that can happen. And I know all of us have gotten those phone calls that actually Terry got one in the office the other day. It's, we've noticed some irregularities on your bank account. And, oh, and by the way, there's been a warrant issued for your arrest. You need to call this number right away. And Terry looks at me and I went, yeah, don't call him.
That's usually a giveaway. That's right. The bank one you may call back, but yeah, you should know that there's no warrant out there for your arrest.
Exactly. And the numbers that they give you, if by chance you're one of those people that get one of those calls, don't call that number if they say your Citibank account is, we've noticed some irregularities or whatever. Don't call the number they give you. Go to the back of your Citibank card or go online and get the phone number. And call directly to your bank or your credit card company, because it's a scam and they're giving you this phone number, and whenever you call it, it sounds legit. They get all your information and then it's too late. So if anyone calls and gives you a number to call, don't call it. Call your company directly.
Yeah, don't call it. Call it back. And, you know, there are a lot of scams and they're preying on you because you're afraid that someone has your, you know, bank account information and they're taking money out, you know. But just go to your bank and find out if that's true or not, right? Don't respond. What's another one they have is there's something wrong with your Social Security. I know that's one they have out that you need to call. The IRS one, I've gotten that many times, you know. It doesn't even sound like the IRS, though. So.
Well, they're usually waiting for you outside. If you don't wire us $5,000, the IRS agents are outside waiting to come in. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. Unless you've probably stolen millions of dollars, they're not outside your door.
And they wouldn't call and warn you if they did.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
If you've stolen millions of dollars, they're not going to give you a warning before they bust down the door. So yeah, those are just things. One of the newer ones that happened a lot during the pandemic was people that met other people online, right? Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, a scam. And all of a sudden, you've got this online relationship with somebody, and then all of a sudden, it's like, oh my gosh, something happened to my son, and I'm going to have to fly and go see him, and I don't have any money, and we've got this great relationship. Could you loan me a few $100s or a few $1,000s? And the person gives them the money.
I know. People are very trusting, right?
And they're lonely. I mean, and people lonely, were locked down. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so don't do that. You know, often if they want you to, you know, go get a gift card, right? That's a tip-off, or Western Union, you know, go there and transfer money. Those are usually tip-offs that it's a scam.
Well, we've had that. We've had emails. Sometimes we get emails in the office that come from not our email address, and it'll say, I need you to go and get Google gift cards for me. And you look at it and you're like, yeah, that's not real. It happened this week, yes. It was Harry's email came across to a bunch of people and said, I am in need of Google gift cards or something like that. Can you assist me? English, yeah. So just be careful. It's one of those things where people don't think about it. They're very trusting. Another thing that I never even thought of, and this is for you younger people that are listening, you know, how now they issue your child's Social Security number whenever they're born, whereas before, back in the olden days, my mom had to go down and get it for us. Sometimes scammers will get their Social Security number, and they'll establish a whole credit thing with this child's Social Security number, and you never know it until your child is like 18 and decides to go do something for themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's right, because your child isn't using their Social Security number, well, when they're babies or for many, many years. So that's true. You wouldn't find out for a long time.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of scary, right? You don't even think about it. Why would you check your child's credit report? Your child's three.
Yeah, that's right.
What kind of credit report are they going to have, right?
That's right. That is, they come up with new and better scams every week.
They do. Mm-hmm. So kind of a parting thing today. Did we pick our horse yet, Ben?
No, I've been too busy. I just gave someone the phone number to Herzog and said that they could call on Monday and talk to you guys.
Oh, great.
So,
That's it. Yeah, so if you want to talk to us or make an appointment, or the phone number at the office is 518-465-7581. And Stacy will be back on Monday. She's been on vacation. She's at extension 122, right?
Yes, and I picked my horse. I'm going to go with Midnight Bourbon.
Of course you are.
Ooh.
It sounds great. Yeah. Although there's another
I think one. I'm going
bourbonic. I can't say it. Bourbonic. So there's two bourbon ones in this.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go for Rock Your World.
Oh, that sounds good.
What do you think, Ben?
I think they're both excellent picks. Go and put some money on them. I definitely will have essential quality. And and then, you know, I look for the best story. I mean, I love the stories that they come up with, but unfortunately, half the time they don't tell you till after the race is over. Ah, if I knew that, I would have thrown them in there.
Well, there's a New York song. There's a New York one, Brooklyn Strong, right?
Brooklyn Strong. I was thinking of that, too. Because I used to live in Brooklyn, so that's a real long shot, though.
Yeah, he's 50 to 1.
I love the names.
I love the names, yeah.
Just throw the 20 of them in there and let's see what happens.
You got to win if you have them all in.
That's true, but no, it's going to be a good race. And this year it's actually on when it's supposed to be. Last year the Derby was in the fall, right?
That's right.
That's right.
Plus there's fans there too, which makes a total difference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
And hopefully there'll be fans at Saratoga this summer, I hope. Fingers
crossed.
That'll
be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So... That's our big
in-person webinars. I mean, seminars. Maybe not soon, but hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be doing our client webinar. We're going to do the client webinar this year again instead of the client seminar. Hopefully by 2022, we'll be able to have the client seminar. But we're looking at a date in July, right, for the client webinar?
Yes, I think we picked July 14th. That's a Wednesday for the client webinar. So there'll be more information about that to come.
Yeah. So you guys have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next weekend.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.